Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Our topic for tonight may sound like a dream, but it can quickly turn into a financial and emotional nightmare. Trillions of dollars are passed down from generation to generation. But while a windfall can provide security, it often comes with a hidden cost, destroying family dynamics, eroding personal ambition, and triggering what psychologists call sudden wealth syndrome. Let's discuss why a large inheritance often turns out to be a burden disguised as a blessing, and how you can protect your wealth and your sanity should the unthinkable happen. Whether you're planning your legacy or expecting to receive one, this is a conversation you can't afford to miss. And with me tonight to have this conversation is none other than Tich Makonese. Hello.
Hey. Good evening, Pimi, and good evening to your listeners, and a happy new year to everybody.
Happy new year. I'm so happy to be, I'm actually excited to be talking to you again, because it's always a good time. So I'm expecting nothing but a good time, Tich. No pressure.
I would say cheers to that.
All right. Let's start by talking about the sudden wealth syndrome. I don't think a lot of people have heard of it. They might have an idea or conception of what it is, but let's talk about it. For example, a lottery winner goes broke soon after winning millions. Why does a large sudden inheritance often trigger similar self-destructive behaviors in people?
Whoa! So I'm not a qualified psychologist.
Yeah.
But you know, my sense is always a sudden change in circumstances, regardless of what they are, is never prepared for. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you're driving down the road and you know the car in front of you suddenly breaks. Mm-hmm. I think in hindsight, you know all the things that you needed to do, but in that moment, you find that there's very little time for you to think about what you want to do. Mm. So you kind of just do the first thing that comes to mind, and it's not always the right thing. And I think this also happens with wealth that you acquire suddenly. Mm. It's just beyond your expectations. Mm. I think you're ill-equipped to deal with it. Mm. And we all have aspirations that are driven by the availability of money, you believe.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as that money becomes available, you know, we think we are free to do all the things that we wanted to do about it. There are also a lot of external factors. I think money attracts friends. And you suddenly find yourself in rarefied company, and not everybody in your company is looking out for your best interests. I think there are just a multitude of reasons. Money in itself is never something that we are taught. You know, I keep saying this, you know, in our various conversations, that there are very few of us that have actually had a full-on conversation about getting money and managing money and just understanding what to do, what not to do, how to do it, when to do it. And it's kind of really hard to start learning this, because you now suddenly have a lot of money, almost like swimming, right?
Yeah.
You don't swim when you're, and just throw you into the deep end and expect you to pull out a pool and go to the side of the pool. And I think sudden money does that. Having said that, these weird money behaviors are not necessarily restricted to people that get money suddenly. I think even people that get money little by little and build up wealth over a period of time will also exhibit some of these really, let's call them destructive behaviors.
Yeah.
The phenomenon is real. You know, sudden wealth syndrome. But I'd like to go in with a little grace to say it's almost inevitable, though not unavoidable.
And I'm so happy you took it there, because my first instinct as you're speaking is, I don't know if this just happens to people who are financially illiterate, or it can happen to people who've had all the education as well. Because I don't know, with money, it becomes very emotional and not very logical at some points. And I don't know what the inflection point is. But I've seen people with financial literacy and education still making really bad financial difficult decisions when large sums of money allocate them?
It's because I think because of the whole aspirational aspect of money, I think for a lot of things we think we are unable because we don't have the money. And when we suddenly have the money, we suddenly think we are supremely capable. Yeah. And also because of the societal attitude to money, you know, we joke about families in which maybe wealth is concentrated in one side of the family where it's a funeral and we feel we can't bury this person until Titch arrives because Titch needs to make all the decisions. But in essence, we are like kind of Titch calls the shots here. He pays the piper.
Yeah.
And we don't want to get on his bad side. So there's a lot of things involved in there when we start talking about money and when we talk about inheritance. You know, I almost want to ask us to take a couple of steps back, because I think we have enough time to be able to do that.
Okay.
To talk about inheritance generally, before we then get into what we'd consider to be the pitfalls of a large inheritance, because I think that those pitfalls are actually outcomes. They are actually indicative of a lot of other things that happen way before that money happens. Yeah.
And let's talk about it. Let's talk about your ideology around inheritance.
Okay. So I don't know if it's an ideology. These are just my thoughts. But you know, when we talk about inheritance, I think the first thing that comes to mind is we are talking of a time post an event. So when we speak about inheritance, because inheritance is usually you qualify for an inheritance by virtue of being offspring, by virtue of being progeny. So I can't go and inherit my neighbor's property, for instance, because people are turning around and saying, so what rights to inheritance do you have, right? So the right to inheritance is earned, particularly most times via lineage. So whether that lineage is biological or assumed through adoption, when we start talking inheritance, we're thinking there was somebody before, and when their time passed, it became time for somebody else to do something. And that's a very, very important thought when we start talking about inheritance, because we are possibly looking at, and this is where some of that, you know, sudden wealth syndrome comes through. We are looking at, call them, you know, at its most basic term, it's property, money, land, buildings. But I want us in this conversation to also talk about rights and obligations or entitlements that come via inheritance. Because I think when we speak of inheritance, we are very quick to talk about the houses and the cars and the bank accounts and the jewelry, like literally only just material things. And I think that is where the issue of inheritance starts becoming a little clouded, because you can pass on an inheritance that is not just money or not just material things. So, you know, and one of the things that you can pass on as an inheritance to your children or to people that inherit from you is reputation and a good name or contacts, you know. So just the money aspect is important for us to consider. But, you know, an inheritance takes on many different forms. And you kind of qualify for an inheritance by being offspring or by being progeny or somebody that has left something behind, which then leaves us with an expectation of the person that bequeaths this inheritance, right? Because, like I say, I think as far as inheritance is concerned, sudden wealth syndrome is actually an output. You know, guys in business talk of lead indicators and lag indicators. And I think that sudden wealth syndrome, where inheritance is concerned, is actually a lag indicator. It's something that manifests itself as a result of other things that have happened before. So if you wanted to avoid it, you wouldn't address it. You'd actually need to go a couple of steps back. The easy one is when people don't leave a good inheritance, right? And a good inheritance, you can define it in a number of ways. It could be ill-gotten wealth, and maybe I pass away before I get to face justice. and I leave that inheritance to my children. Mm. It's not a great inheritance, because wherever I took that money from is actually going to come for it, right? And I might not be there to face the music, but yeah. I don't think that anybody that inherits that money is going to enjoy it, right? So that's a bad inheritance. That's not a great inheritance. Yeah. It's ill-gotten. You leave other guys to face the music. But if we start talking about a terrible inheritance as well, if I'm a businessman and every single time I go into a deal with people, I leave them short, right? And then my son after me and decides he's also going into business. And each time they bump into him, they sit around the table and say, hey, that's Stitch's son. Mm-hmm. You've got to count your fingers when that guy shakes your hand, right? So that's a terrible inheritance, right? So in both those instances, if my son gets that money, either ill-gotten wealth or I've left him a terrible business reputation, and then we see him 2 years later and suddenly he's got very little to show for it. Mm. The problem is not actually him. The problem is the inheritance itself was tainted. There was no way he was going to be able to keep it. It was stolen, and the people that it was stolen from follow it, right? He inherited from me a bad name. So he was never going to be able to be as successful as I might have deemed to have been, because I didn't leave him a name. I didn't leave him contacts. I didn't leave him people that can see him as a reliable person. You've seen people who progress in life simply because they are the son of so-and-so.
Yes.
And then we start talking about, this world is about who you know and what you, and not what you know. But if we're honest with ourselves, we will find that for a lot of those people, they actually ride on the back of good reputations, and they also then go out of their way to maintain that reputation, to preserve that inheritance.
Yeah.
So if my father was a good man, he was an honest businessman, he was kind to the people that he met, when people see me, they see my father.
Mm.
And if I've got some harebrained scheme that I think will make money, they're more inclined to listen to me because of that.
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, but this is Nelson's son. He should be a good guy. So I've got time for you. Tell me. You know, I've had great dealings with your father. We've done great things together, and we've achieved things. So that's also an inheritance that I inherit. But if it's the inverse of that, if it's the reverse, if it's a terrible reputation, it means all the doors are closing in my face. So in that case, is it sudden wealth syndrome, or is it purely just a bad inheritance? You know, so when I say we need to turn back, is while we talk of people trying to manage the inheritance when it comes, I think it would be best for us not to also have a conversation about the people that leave the inheritance.
Yeah.
And say, what inheritance are you actually leaving behind? Is it clean money? You know, is it not ill-gotten gains? That's the first thing. And is it a good reputation? Is it a good name? Is it good contacts? Is it honorable behavior? Let's start. So once we've cleared that up, then we can start saying, okay, so maybe the guys that get it, you know, what exactly are you trying to do, and how do you do it, and how do you manage it?
And it sounds to me as you're speaking that inheritance, or the manifestation of the inheritance, is really the last part, or the last portion of the whole equation, because it sounds to me like the person living, as in you and me, needs to think very deeply about the things we do and the people we engage with in order to leave this inheritance. So I'm thinking now, as you're speaking, that it actually requires so much intentionality, even in the work that we do, the businesses that we engage in, and all of those things, because we are leaving a trace. And that trace, unfortunately, once you're gone, you will not be able to see. But those who are picking up from where you left off will feel the effects and will have to continue in those footsteps.
That's exactly correct. So if you were to word it differently, I'm simply saying you cannot separate the inheritance from the one that bequeaths it. Because a lot of the problems that are in the inheritance itself start from how this inheritance has been acquired, or the form and the nature of that inheritance. Before you then come to the person who has received it to say, oh, you know, sudden wealth syndrome, you've gone, you've squandered it, you've gone, you've done so many things. The other thing as well, which is a huge reality when you start talking about inheritance, is people inherit stuff and they don't know how this stuff has actually been attained.
Mm.
So they also don't know how to maintain it.
Sure.
Because they simply do not know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like saying there's a knowledge gap, mm. right? So if my dad makes billions of dollars mm. trading futures and derivatives mm. and all that stuff mm. and I have no cooking clue mm. how this works,
mm.
it's very, very likely that I'm going to try and dabble in this stuff after he's gone, and yeah. very soon after that,
yeah,
there's little left to show for it, mm. right? So at the point where he had the opportunity to pass the knowledge, if the knowledge has not been passed, or I have not made the effort to actually acquire that knowledge,
mm.
the fact that I then am a pauper a couple of years later was just a fait accompli waiting to manifest itself, because mm. this thing was already tainted before I got it.
Sure. That's so deep. That's so deep. And before we move into the rest of the conversation, for those who are going to fortunately or be fortunate enough to earn these inheritances in the form of money and assets, if there is a parent out there who doesn't want this to come as a shock to their kids and to them at the end of their lives, and are thinking right now what kind of inheritance they can leave for their children. I know that you had mentioned a good name and good dealings in business, but perhaps they don't have businesses. What are some other ideas that they can think through about the kind of legacy or the things that are inheritances that their children can piggyback on?
So We've in a previous conversation spoken about how life is a continuum,
yeah.
How each one of us has a part to play.
Yeah.
It started when we were born, mm. and the natural order of things is in some shape or form at some point we bow off the stage. Circumstances of that mm. vary from people to people. But, you know, the living know that they shall die.
Yeah.
You know, even scripture talks about it. So this whole concept of inheritance says, how does life mm. continue after I'm gone,
mm.
right? So mm. when you look at giving your children the best education you
yes.
can to empower them
yes.
to be able to live
mm.
and to sustain themselves,
mm.
that in itself is a form of inheritance,
yeah.
which is why, you know, my definition of inheritance is, you know, it's property, titles, privileges,
mm.
and sometimes it's even obligations that you can leave as a parent.
Mm.
Because if my dad passes away and he owes John money,
yeah,
trust me, John is going to come to me afterwards to say,
oh,
listen,
sure.
your dad owed me, he owed me money. You
in
know?
Fact,
so
the
some inheritances,
the story with that widow in the book of there with Elijah in Kings. That's where it started,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah.
Right? So you see those to say that, you know, the inheritance can take many,
mm.
many, many different forms.
Mm.
So as a parent, when you are thinking of your inheritance, you know, 13, and we talk about
mm,
a good man leaving an inheritance for his children's children,
mm.
and we immediately think of, I must leave so much money that my grandchildren can live off the money that I've made.
Mm.
That's also very, very cool,
mm.
you know.
Mm.
But like I say, we need to look at some of the less material aspects of
yes.
an inheritance. Your character,
yeah.
your name,
yes.
your standing in society,
mm.
What you're known for, you
your
know.
Teachings.
Are you known for compassion? Yes. Are you known for compassion?
Yeah.
Are you known for love?
Yeah.
There are people who you meet, you know, as you go along life's journey
mm.
and you don't know them. And in interacting with them, they then perhaps get to find out a little more about who you
yeah.
are. And they say, okay, I can see how you would be John's son.
Mm.
I can, there are things there in my culture.
Mm.
When people are getting married, we always say, marry people from the ruins that you know.
Mm.
Right. To say it's almost like, know where these people are coming
mm.
from, because we these people have a way of doing things that
yeah.
they pass on
yeah.
to the families,
yeah.
their inheritance,
mm.
you know, that's part of that inheritance. So
mm.
when we talk inheritance, I always say marry people whose
mm.
inheritance you know,
mm.
you know, whose characters,
mm.
whose traits, whose behaviors you are acquainted
mm.
with. And how are those established?
Mm.
It's through inheritance.
True.
So if your father was you know, a good man who conducted himself honorably. We don't expect you to walk through our doors and start trying to swindle us.
Yes. It's like, where did you learn this from?
Yes. They'll even ask you, whose child are you? You've heard, you know, the elders, they talk about that. They say, whose child are you? You know? So that's a situation where you've been left a good inheritance. And like the prodigal son, you've gone and you've squandered that inheritance.
Yeah.
Because you can also do that, right? Because yes, we speak of, a bad inheritance, but we also need to also be aware of a bad inheritor. Where the where the inheritance itself is good. But how do you conduct yourself, you know, in relation to that inheritance? You know this money has been made of an honest living, honest hard labor. You inherit this money and now you're starting to try and pull scams all over town. There's a dissonance there in terms of how you should be, you should conduct yourself. So we then turn around and we say, oh, it's sudden wealth syndrome. But I also believe that because inheritance is an attempt to say, this is my part in this continuum called life. I took it from here and I brought it to here. The person that takes it from where I leave off should not then make an about turn and start living differently. Because that dissonance also then adds up with people having very little to show for the inheritance that they inherit. It's been built on certain foundations. You discard those foundations and you try and take it somewhere else. Yes, there's evolution and maybe our business was a driving school and now people don't drive anymore because they get Ubers. I can understand that. So maybe it's not a driving school anymore. Maybe now it's Ubers. But you need to respect the traditions on which whatever it is that you inherit has been built on and you build up on that.
Oh, I love that so much. Titch, research shows that roughly 70% of wealth transfers fail by the third generation. What are the most common reasons that heirs fail to preserve a family legacy in your view?
There are a couple of things. I think we've spoken at length about how whether those that inherit are actually given an opportunity to understand how this wealth is acquired and what needs to be done to maintain it.
And maybe even why it was established to begin with.
This is true. This is true. You know, you always want to go back to first principles because even when we started by saying, you know, what is inheritance? And we said, well, it's not just monetary. There are things there that are not monetary that you can actually also inherit. And sometimes when you look at what passing through the generations is to say, you know, have people that are inherited had an opportunity to understand how this wealth has been acquired, why it was acquired. And also to be honest with yourselves, you know, regarding your ability to manage what you need to manage. So when you look at families, which, you know, interestingly, families are the biggest owners of businesses across the world. So every time you go into an economy, you know, you obviously have these really huge companies that are listed, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a lot of businesses have their origin in families. And you'll find that there are a lot of families that have gone, you know, to the step to the extent of saying, we are not managers of these businesses or these things that we've inherited. They are professionals that can manage these businesses. We will allow and we will hire professionals to manage these businesses and we will just hold them accountable. So one of the biggest reasons for failure is people inherit really large, complex machines or estates or empires and confuse ownership with management. And it's all very well if you're well equipped, you're skilled, you're experienced enough to be able to run those entities. But if you are not, then you need to have an honest conversation with yourself about how it is that you can get the right people to support you to be able to run it without necessarily relinquishing ownership.
Let's talk about the idea of easy come, easy go. If you have not sweated and worked for something, you don't value it, and therefore your chances of squandering it are high. What is your take on that, given the conversation we're having around parents being intentional about leaving a good name and good assets and a good inheritance completely for their children, and their children potentially not valuing it because it's not their sweat that went into it?
I think it's a knowledge gap for one of two reasons. Mm. Firstly, we all want to live well.
This is true. I think
that, yeah, we all want to live well. Mm. So I don't see somebody, you know, getting that opportunity to live well, whether by inheritance or through their own work, mm. turning around and saying, you know, what's the quickest way to put myself back onto the other side of the tracks? I think it's a knowledge gap. I think people take actions and they make decisions that they think are best, but because they do not have the right knowledge or the right experience, they then make what in hindsight are considered to be bad decisions. Mm. And I think that's a very fundamental thought that we should, some people will look at it and say, yeah, but you know, some things would be obvious, but I always want to give people grace and say they will probably make the wrong decisions with the right intentions.
Yeah,
and if they had the right knowledge, they would preserve what they've inherited or what they has been bequeathed to them, mm. because we all want to live well.
Yeah.
We all want to live well. I'm sure there'll be the few outliers amongst us who will inherit a fortune and think to themselves, how do I squander this really quickly?
Yeah.
But those are in the minority, and I don't think that's the discussion we're having.
Mm. Why do large inheritances often bring out the worst in, and I want to say siblings, but in family members? I remember a family that lived opposite us when I was growing up. The parents got really sick. This boy's parents got really sick, and they ran a taxi business. The father, I think it was mm-hmm. the father that died first, and then the mother died next. Can I tell you those mm-hmm. family members took the tech, they split the taxis among each other. They felt so entitled. They took everything that belonged to the parents. And this is from both sides. Well, no, the father's side. Mm. And they were so close to taking the house that the mother's sister had to say, what do you want to see happen with the boy? Where should he stay? If you're going to take everything that can bring him money, at least leave him with the roof above his head. So why is it that when inheritances are in the picture, it seems to bring out the worst in people?
I don't disagree with the point of view that you take, mm. but I also just want to take a couple of steps back. Mm. You know, in law, they have some Latin phrase. I don't recall it now. It's a while since I did those readings, but it's something around ignorantia non excusata or something in reference to the law, which says your ignorance of the law does not absolve you from the reach of the law, right? So I can't just get into your house and take your car and drive off, and then they say you stole. And I'm like, I didn't think that was theft because the keys were there. They'll still come to me and say you stole a car, right? And so I think the reality is when we get into the world of business and we start owning assets and we start, you know, having cash and we're registering things in our name, we are smack bang center in the legal world, regardless of whether we think it or not.
Mm.
And that thing comes with certain obligations. So now you've got a dog, someone's walking past your house, dog runs out and bites them, and they come to you and say, your dog bit me. And that means there are obligations that come with ownership.
Mm.
And I think what happens a lot of the time with inheritances is the person who is supposed to be bequeathing this stuff has not taken all the necessary legal steps to actually protect things that are left behind.
Yeah.
Yes. So we all live like we will live forever.
Oh,
but we want to have that conversation that says, where's my will? Mm. What happens in the event that I die? This does not stop people, obviously, from trying to come and take what they feel they should have simply because they're my brothers or my sisters. Mm. But it also gives my children a leg to stand on, a whole framework, a judicial framework that says to them, hold up, you know, he died, he left a will, and the will says these things need to go to his children.
Mm.
Unless you are his child, you know, please step away.
Mm.
So that gap, I think, is often exploited, particularly because sometimes, you know, and I say this with a lot of caution, because sometimes we want to mix what we consider our traditional ways of living with what is the more modern way of living, right? Traditionally, it was unspoken. You know, I pass away, my young brother could even inherit my wife and my children, and this was seen as normal. But in the midst of that equation, and my house, but in the midst of that equation, I have got a house that I have bought, that I have titled deeds to, and there's a law that says because I have passed on, this house cannot be owned by a dead person. It needs to pass to somebody, but it can't just be any random person. It can be a person that I have nominated. And in the absence of me having nominated somebody, the court can follow a process that determines who the best person to now own that house is. So we've got the traditional thing that says, oh, he's passed away, his young brother is here. But I own a house on the base of the legal framework.
Yes.
Because remember, that legal framework doesn't just kick in when I die. That legal framework also exists even when I'm buying the house, because I'm buying it within the confines of that legal framework that enabled me to pull out a title deed that says, hey, this house is actually mine. So we have problems sometimes when those two worlds collide, because sometimes we want to pretend that, oh, no, I'm very traditional, you know, but here you are holding title deeds, holding blue books for cars, which are bang in the middle of what we want to call the Western way of doing things. And when we pass away, that intersection leaves people exposed, right? So a huge source of the worst that comes out of people when we come to inheritances is because we have not prepared properly. We have not engaged the framework that protects the things we've left behind, that also protects the people that we've left behind. So in a situation where I've got five children and I pass away and I don't leave a will, each one of them feels entitled.
And they are, in all honesty.
They are, right? But I could have managed that by saying, okay, let's divide this thing in five. Or rather, I want to leave it to this one who looks like they've got more of a level head and they will manage these things on behalf of everybody else. So people may not agree, but at least there's a starting point. There's a common starting point.
And let's talk about estate planning a bit more. For somebody who's overwhelmed by the idea, when they hear estate planning, they're thinking, oh, I need to have millions. I need to have property here, there, and everywhere. Please just take estate planning down to its very simplistic form.
We need to prepare. We need to accept that we are not going to be able to talk about, you know, don't spend all the money you make, put some money aside, create a rainy day fund, etc. You know, you're acknowledging that, you know, you can't determine the future. So even in terms of our very lives, we are grateful each morning we wake up. But one day we wake up and we are not there anymore. But our obligations and our responsibilities sadly do not die with us.
No.
You know, if you've got children, you still have an obligation in some shape or form to give them a started life, whether it's by giving them education or making sure they still have a roof over their head. And when you plan your estate, these are the things that you are catering for. You know, you started working, you've come deep from the sixth Kwamashu, nothing against Kwamashu, beautiful place, I'm pretty certain of it. But because of the way your family is set up, you're the first guy to make it. So you know that every single month you want to be able to send something there to make sure, you know, people at home have got something to eat. You know, and then do you want them to go back to suffering after you pass away while people will all over the place fight over things that you left behind? You don't want to do that, you know. So remember, we've spoken about an inheritance being obligations as well, and responsibilities that you have. And you also look at the obligations and responsibilities that you have while you're alive, and you want to be able to make a plan for what happens to them in the event that you are not there. And that's how you start looking at estate planning. So it's not necessarily around, you know, how many houses do you have, how many cars do you have, or how much money do you have. It's what are your obligations, what are your responsibilities, and in the event that you are not there to take care of those obligations or those responsibilities, who takes care of them? And if you have means to be able to make sure you can do that even after you are gone, then you need to plan your estate. And it goes back to that point where we said, you know, life is a continuum. And when we say it's a continuum, you might have your part where it's point A to point B, where you stop But there's so much happening after point B that you still have an impact on by virtue of you having been part of this journey.
For sure.
And you want to make sure those things continue to happen after you're gone.
Yeah. I love that you use the word continuum now, because I wanted to piggyback on that as we wrap up this conversation. In corporates, we have something called succession planning, right? And the idea here is that a leader will take a junior, or at least someone junior to them, under their wings and train them in the job and teach them the ropes. Literally just make sure that once they leave, it's as if nothing happened. Of course, their presence and their essence will be felt. But as far as the job is concerned, there is a continuation. That continuum is effected. And I think if we think about inheritance like that, as people, as families, as responsible family members who know that we will die one day, succession planning could be a way that we think about how we live and who we take under our wing, so that once we go, they can pick up the baton and run with it. What is your parting shot as we wrap up this conversation? Everything that you've said just led me to that point of succession planning. That is how we maintain a good inheritance in the family.
I think you've summed it up beautifully, and you're actually very right. The whole concept of succession planning, you know, speaks to what happens in the future. Mm. It speaks to what happens if there's a sudden change, because, you know, it's, you know, this thing with succession planning, especially in corporate, you know, you can have a CEO, you know, get bumped by a train on his way to the office.
Yes.
You know, we hope that doesn't happen to too many guys.
and
what happens
many
to the organization? Yes, you know, some people will be unfortunate in that respect. But, you know, so the concept is actually clear, because this whole succession planning is just about continuity.
Yeah.
And when we talk about that continuum to say, you know, what happens after I'm gone? Mm. Who have I equipped to be able to do this? Mm. What protections have I put in place to make sure that these things happen? Because when you look at the concept of this in corporate, you know, you get guys being sent off to university or to business school or to take other courses, or they get sent off on assignments in different places to learn. And these are things that we can also do as families.
Yes.
You know, there's an ethnic community who are very big in business,
Absolutely.
Who are very deliberate about saying, if we are running trucks here, we're going to send our son off to business school. Mm. He's going to come back into the business. He's going to start off as a mechanic. Mm. He's going to become a route supervisor. Mm. Then he's going to be head of the workshop. They are preparing for all these things. Mm. And sadly, in a lot of instances, you see people who, you know, don't want to build. And I keep going back as well to those that inherit. You know, they don't want to build on the foundation that has been put in place, right? I know we all want to be our own person.
Yes.
And we all want to do things by ourselves and start from zero and tell ourselves that we are self-made men and all of that. But I think part of the success of inheritance is actually just accepting that we accept the baton from other people.
Yeah, you are part of an ecosystem. Right?
You are part of the race. So there's no point... You know, you line up there on a relay and everybody's running towards the finish line.
Yes.
And then when they give you the baton, you make a U-turn and start running back to where people came from. You know, that's just crazy, right? So part of it is us also, as people that inherit, making peace with the fact that they are those that have run the race.
Yes.
They've done the first 100.
Yes.
They've done the second 100.
Yes.
My part is to run the third 100 and pass this stick and run in the right direction.
Mm.
And then give this stick also to the next guy who must also run in the right direction.
Yeah.
Take this thing to the finish line. It's a race.
Mm.
I run my part.
Mm.
And when it's time for me to stop running my part, I stop.
Mm.
And also pass the stick on to the other person.
Yes.
Who also runs in the right direction. So that's, for me, is the whole concept of inheritance. There's the part that we play when we leave an inheritance, but there's a part that needs to be played by those that receive the inheritance.
It, yes.
As part of just a race, a relay race. And in as much as I have a responsibility, if I'm a parent, to leave a good inheritance, the one who inherits also has a responsibility to make sure that they're a good recipient and they preserve. And when it's their time to hand over the baton, it's the baton to hand over.
Mm. you know, what you're saying right now is bringing so much into light. So I was, my brother and I were speaking about a friend of mine, and my brother was just talking about what a good family they are from and how they can trust that their presence in my life is going to be positive because they're from a good family. And as I'm listening to you speak, I'm also realizing that when you do receive a good name and a good inheritance, understanding what a privilege it is and moving as somebody who is privileged is also so important.
That actually matters, right?
Yeah.
Because I think there are some times where you receive a good thing and you don't acknowledge it for how good it is, or you just take it for granted. And if you're fortunate, sometimes you realize that in enough time to change course. And in some cases, you just become a what could have been practitioner, where you tell people how you had it so good a few years ago, the world was your oyster, and there's very little to show for it. So when we talk, you know, about large inheritances, I hope, you know, at the end of this discussion, we get to that place where we are like, money and material things are really good to be able to bequeath, to be able to inherit. Oh, man.
We can hear you, Titch.
I'm still there.
Yeah. Titch, are you able to hear me? Oh, man, I'm so sad. We've just lost Titch. But that was so good. That was so good. The thing with Titch, having Titch on the show is actually very problematic because he never sticks to the script. Titch, I'm talking about you here, and I'm saying to the people, because we had lost you, but I'm saying the thing about having you on the show is that you never stick to the script. I know that the producer tells you what we're going to talk about, and suddenly I have to create questions as we go because, no, you don't follow the script. But the beauty about it is that because of that, our minds get so opened. If we came into the conversation thinking one thing, even from the first conversation I had with you about retirement, you're like, I'm not here to talk about retirement. I'm here to talk about how we live right now. And this is a very similar pattern that I'm seeing here. So the beauty of having a conversation with you is someone really gets their eyes open, but also their scope of thinking widens. And it's not limited to what they had or what they insist on holding on to, even if it is cutting their hand. So thank you. Thank you for doing that all the time. But also thank you for the knowledge and the wisdom that you shared in this particular conversation.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much, Mpumi. I hope that you also still feel that we covered the topic, even though we probably approached it a little unconventionally.
Yes.
But as always, it's very much a pleasure to speak with you guys, and I'm really grateful for the privilege that it is. I don't take it lightly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Titch. Cheers.
Cheers.
And with that, I am Nompumelelo Lombonani, and I hope you have made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.